I'm Reinhard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 185 for the weekend starting 28 July 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, MTN plunges on earnings update.
Plus the curious case of EOH's share price, Blue Label wraps up the Cell C deal, Telkom versus Vodacom on fibre, and Facebook moves to monetize WhatsApp and Messenger.
It's Friday, and that means it's time for another podcast.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Reinhard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. It's been a busy week this week.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Lots going on, which is good for us because it means there's lots of tech news to talk about in our podcast. But before we get to that, let's do our quiz. Do you want to kick it off?
Yes, the first question in this week's quiz. Following the news that Andile Mkhwanazi's conversion partners has sold its stake in Dimension Data Middle East and Africa, the IT services company plans to do a new BEE deal for its South African business. When must it conclude this deal by?
Question two, Telkom this week won a high court case against rival Vodacom, which was accused of installing fibre in its ducts in which Cape Town residential estate?
The third question, which top female US technology executive is rumoured to be a frontrunner to take over as CEO of Uber?
Johannesburg Finance MMC Rabalani Degada has promised that the city's broken billing system will be fixed by when?
And the last question in this week's quiz, another German software company has joined SAP in being caught up in alleged kickback scandal involving the Guptas. So what is the name of this company?
That's our quiz this week, not the easiest set of questions we've had.
No.
But we'll get to the answers to those at the end of this
double podcast. Points in this week's quiz.
yeah, certainly some of those questions are a bit on the tough side. But it's almost weekended, and it's time to podcast and talk news, and a lot has happened this week. Telkom won a high court case against Vodacom, MTN share price fell through the floor, EOH's share price has been all over the place, Blue Label did its Cell C deal, plenty to talk about. We're going to get onto all of that. But in case you missed it, we've had some great podcasts this week as well. On our sister podcast, the Tech Central podcast, where we interview interesting people in the ICT space in South Africa. And there's two I think that are worth going to have a listen to if you haven't yet. And one of those is with the guys from Project Ubu, which is this plan to create a cryptocurrency and store of value that is meant to serve as almost a what do you call it? They call it a universal basic income for people. So the idea is that unutilized capital is reallocated into this. I'm not quite sure how exactly that's going to work, but it's a very interesting conversation by these interview with these guys, and they certainly know their stuff around cryptocurrency. So if that's your thing and you're interested in that sort of project and how it could potentially impact the poor, it's worth going to have a listen to that one. They've got some very interesting ideas, and there's some very interesting people behind Project Ubu. I keep wanting to say Ubuntu. Project Ubu. And the other one I think that's worth a listen is my interview this week with Rabalani Degada, who is the MMC, or member of the mayoral committee for the city of Johannesburg. He's basically Herman Mashaba's right-hand man in the city of Joburg. And that was quite a wide-ranging interview, talking about the city's billing system, why it's taking longer to fix than they thought, plans for broadband in the city, plans for Wi-Fi rollout, etc., etc. So if you're a resident of Joburg, I think you'll find that podcast particularly interesting in terms of what the DA-led administration has got planned for the city. And so those are the Tech Central podcasts, which you should definitely go and check out. But let's get on to this week's news. And I thought let's start with MTN, Reinhard, because it is so topical. So on Thursday, they issued a trading update. They're going to actually be publishing their results next week, Wednesday, I think it is, the 3rd of August. That's for the 6 months to the end of the end of June 2017. Interim results, and they've indicated they're going to report a profit from a loss at the full year period, and this profit is because they don't have all those extraordinary items working into the system, like the Nigerian fine, the costs associated with negotiating the Nigerian fine, etc. So they're going to record a profit of between, I think it was 210 and 230 cents per share, and that's the headline, the HEPS or headline earnings per share number. The share price went tumbling down on the back of this earnings update. And at one stage, I think it was down around about 10%. So it clearly fell short of what analysts and investors had been expecting them to produce. I went back and had a look at the HEPS numbers for MTN 2 years ago, the 2015 interim period. So the same six-month period just back in 2015. And the HEPS numbers are going to be between 65 and 68% lower than they were then. And that was before the Nigeria fine, the Nigeria debacle happened. So their headline earnings numbers are down two-thirds from the same period before the Nigeria situation happened. So it would suggest that operationally they're not doing very well.
Yeah, it's not the kind of numbers you want to see from a, from one of the biggest operators in the country, right?
Sure.
In this time of the year.
I mean, especially given that their rivals are doing so well. I mean, Telkom's numbers came off a bit after their last set of results, but that wasn't so much to do with the financial performance of the company. It was more to do with the fact that they announced they were going to really up their capital expenditure, spend more money building their networks, fiber, all that sort of thing. So in a way, it was positive because they're investing for the future. Vodacom put out their numbers, and their share price has been touching record highs. Cell C is also seems to be moving in the right direction, and of course they're being recapitalized now with the Blue Label deal, and their net debt is being reduced to below 6 billion rand from 23 billion rand. So they're going to be in a much stronger position with a better balance sheet that will allow them to compete more effectively. So in many respects, MTN does look a bit like the odd one out here in that its operational performance is not looking so good. And that's for any number of reasons. The South African operation has been, hasn't had the greatest time with the number of CEO changes they've been through over the last 3 or 4 years. There does seem to be stability coming into that MTN South Africa operation now, but it's probably going to take some time to start to see the fruits of that. And of course, Nigeria, beyond just the fine, is a seriously troubled economy, very reliant on oil. And of course, the oil price is sitting down at $50. When it was up at $150, they were doing fantastically. But that economy has been in recession, I think, now for 8 consecutive quarters, if I recall correctly, reading it this week. That's their biggest market, and it's in serious recession. Iran's doing a bit better. But two of their biggest markets are not doing very well. So. And in South Africa, particularly, they're facing very, very powerful, very strong competitors who are doing very, very well at the moment.
So
MTN in a difficult position, but I suppose these numbers do show that they've put the worst pain behind them now, and that was obviously the regulatory issues. So presumably, from here on out, Rob Shooter and the new management team at the group level are going to start to turn things around, and that operational number should start to improve. But these things, especially for a company the size of MTN Group, these things take time. So shareholders knocking that share price lower on Thursday. And lots of corporate news this week, actually. Lots of talk about share prices and financial markets. EOH is a really – I've been watching this company's share price with a great deal of interest over the last few weeks. It's really come down dramatically. Not long ago, the company was trading, I think, at around 180 rand a share. Today, or on Thursday, rather, it fell below 100 rand. It actually,
104 rand.
Yeah, it tumbled all the way down to 96 rand earlier on Thursday morning. Massive gyrations. The share price was actually down around 10%, over 9% at one point. The company then issued a statement to shareholders, or to stakeholders, as they put it, and the share price shot back up again, and at one point actually went positive. So these are incredible gyrations for a share price. Very unusual to see this sort of level of gyration, especially given that there was no real news in the market. It's unclear why investors have turned so bearish on EOH. This company has delivered robust earnings growth. I mean, we're talking 20, 30, 40% EPS growth consistently for 10 or 15 years.
That's good.
That's very good. I mean, some investors have even said, how is this possible? And, there is quite a bit of skepticism about how exactly they've managed to do this. They issue scrip for for acquisitions, and a lot of people question whether that's a sustainable model, and they suggest that maybe it's going to come back and bite them at some point. It hasn't yet, although the share price, the way the share price has come off, would suggest that the market is pricing in, if not disaster, certainly pricing in a dramatic slowing down of the earnings growth that this company has reported historically. I think there are a number of issues that are putting pressure here. I think one is that the founding CEO, Asher Bobot, stepped down last month. I think it was unexpected that he was going to leave.
Causes some uncertainty.
It does indeed. So he's left, and it's unclear. He wasn't that old. It's not clear why he stepped down. Perhaps it was health related. I don't know. I'm speculating there. But he's gone, and the new CEO is Zunaid Mayet. Now, I've spoken to analysts, and the general view is that the management they did the right thing in the way they handled the succession here. Mm. They've appointed they've promoted internal people rather than going externally to find a new CEO. They had a strong leadership team around Asher Bobot, and those people are still in place. Mm. Zunaid Mayet knows the group very well, has been there for many years, and and has now been promoted into the leadership position. So anyway, the group issued a statement this afternoon, with the share price going all over the place. They said that with the assistance of an independent legal firm, they've now conducted a review and are satisfied that the insinuations published in newspaper reports are false and untrue, and we have repudiated them in the strongest terms. Now, the latest bout of weakness in the share came about when Business Report on its website published what I thought was a very poorly written article, basically rehashing what Amar Mungani, which is investigative journalism unit, published by the Daily Maverick earlier this year. They basically rehashed a whole bunch of allegations and then said that they've had a whole bunch of other stuff that's on the company and look out for this because we're going to publish it. And, this was on the 18th of July. They said in the coming days we're going to be publishing exposés on EOH. And the share price fell through the floor on that day, prompting the company to issue a statement. I think at one point it fell 12%. It was back on the 18th of July. The Business Report story was very poorly written, and it almost read as if someone there had an agenda.
Mm.
Anyway, the share price plummeted on that day on the back of that. It came up a bit again when they issued another statement repudiating the allegations that were published originally by Amar Mungani. But there's been nothing since then. That was on the when was that? 10 days ago, article was published on the 18th of July, and today the share price went into free fall, and there's no clear view of why this happened. There was no new news in the market. There were no newspaper reports, anyway. Certainly not any newspaper reports that I could find that could have pointed to this. So it just seems that the investors are incredibly nervous about this company and where it's going. Their financial results are out in around September. I think their reporting period is to the end of July, so they're right against that reporting period now. So we'll have a clearer indication then of how they're performing. I'm not expecting the numbers to be terrible. There's no indication that those numbers are going to, that the growth that we've seen in EOH historically is not going to continue.
Mm,
mm. Certainly not through this reporting period. I think there's fear about the fear about the departure of Asher Bobot. I think people are really worried that the founding CEO, who is still relatively young, suddenly steps away. And we don't know the real reasons why he stepped down. We can only speculate. Mm.
It's just uncertainty that's causing the
uncertainty.
Volatility, yeah.
It's uncertainty, and then there's the uncertainty around. And I think people are so jittery about this Gupta leak stuff, and any smell of corruption around a company now, and the share price gets sold off heavily. I think especially with a weak economy as well, any sign of bad news out of a company companies get punished instantly for that. And so I think that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing it with other IT companies as well. I mean, Adapt IT is another high-flying tech services company that's done incredibly well, kind of similar model to the EOH, buying companies to grow, growing both organically and through. Yes. Their share prices come off very dramatically this year. I think that was largely on the concern of a slowdown in their organic growth numbers. I think they'd fallen to about 4%, whereas historically they've been much higher than that. But the share price was knocked back heavily. I think it's sitting at just below 10 Rand now. I think it was sitting up at around 16 Rand earlier this year. So that's come back heavily as well. So, you know, one misstep in this market and your shareholders punish you badly.
Oh, yes. That's something you want to happen.
So EOH, you know, I think investors are concerned about this noise around possible corruption. Whether there's any basis to it, and the EOH is there isn't, or not. The whiff of it, I think, sends people scurrying.
We've been burned before in South Africa. I think, you know, standing up for it, people starting to realize, hang on, we need to address this.
So, you know, a company that's historically grown EPS at 20, 30, 40% is now sitting on a price earnings multiple of 13. If you believe this company is fundamentally strong, has no issues with it, has good management, and is not involved in dodgy dealings, then at this share price, it's a bargain. If you're an investor with an appetite for risk, you buy into this, you could make a very healthy return.
Let's just hope somebody isn't using this to make some healthy returns off the back of some fake news style articles. We've seen that movie before.
Yeah, indeed. But interesting times at EOH. I'm going to be watching the share price with a great deal of interest. You know, I don't usually watch all the sector share prices that closely, but EOH I've added to my dashboard and keeping a close eye on it each day, especially after the gyrations on Thursday. I mean, it was remarkable. Almost 10% at one point, then swinging all the way back into the black, and then coming back a bit. I'm not sure what the share. Let me have a look.
You'll have to be on the trading floor to see what spurred these on.
Yes. Yeah. No. Absolutely remarkable. Swings in the share price. Just to make it a trifecta of financial news, Blue Label, I went to the shareholder meeting, general meeting of shareholders at their offices at 75 Grayston Road in Sandton on Wednesday, and the recapitalization of Cell C, which will see Blue Label buying 45% of the mobile operator for 5.5 billion Rand, approved by shareholders, and so that deal is going ahead. Huge deal for both Blue Label and for Cell C. And another one, both those companies bear watching. Mark Levy, the co-CEO, saying at the shareholder meeting that the intention is to list Cell C on the JSE within the next 3 to 5 years. We'll no doubt be seeing Celsius audited numbers from now on anyway. But they'll be listing on the JSE at some point in the future. Very big deal. You know, risk taking by businessmen. I mean, it's Celsius. Future fortunes aren't guaranteed. They're going to have to box clever. They're going to have to. I mean, they're coming up against two bigger players. Certainly, one of those rivals is weakened at the moment. That's MTN. But they've got new management at MTN. MTN's going to turn around, and of course, Vodacom is firing on all cylinders. Competing with those companies is not going to be the easiest. I've always found the Levy brothers to be very wily, smart guys. Execute. So I think we're going to be seeing some interesting products coming to market from Cell C going forward, and I think it'll probably be good for consumers as well.
No, there's no doubt that this industry is I think where the big bucks is. You know, if you are talking about investment of millions and billions, I would spend my money on the telecommunications industry over and over, you know, rather than most other industries, I guess. And it'd be interesting to see what they have in store.
For sure. Lots more to talk about, but we need to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. and being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bidco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to Talk Central. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. So did you see this case that Telkom won against Vodacom this week in the High Court in the Western Cape?
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so it was an estate, and here's one of the answers to our quiz questions. It was a residential estate in Western Cape, somewhere near Somerset West, I believe. Some upmarket residential estate called Denegier. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened, in very brief summary, is that there was a tender to deploy fiber in this estate, and Vodacom was selected by the estate to deploy the fiber. And what happened was that Vodacom allegedly used the existing ducting owned by Telkom to pull the fiber into the houses.
It seems like a perfectly fair thing to do. Why do you want to dig up when you can use existing holes in the ground, right?
The problem is they didn't get permission from Telkom.
Tricky error. But
and this is Telkom's property. So Telkom, the High Court found in favor of Telkom and said this absolutely cannot happen, and Vodacom, you must get rid of your fiber immediately. My guess is that the homeowners didn't want, the estate didn't want Vodacom to trench the place. So they told Vodacom, you must put it through the Telkom.
Yeah, probably. And it's easy. It's an easy solution, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I remember when Vumatel came to install fiber at my complex, they I said to them, can't you just pull it through these Telkom ducts? And the Vumatel guy looked at me wide-eyed and said, no, we absolutely can't do
that. I'm sure they've been warned.
Telkom describing this as a landmark judgment, and I suppose it is in some respects. Yeah. This will now stop anyone from thinking of doing this from actually doing it.
Exactly.
Because Telkom or anyone else could force go to the courts, although it's unlikely to go to the courts in future in light of the fact that there's been this judgment. Court finding in favor of Telkom and awarding costs to Telkom. And so Vodacom has to remove its fiber from Denegier Estate.
And the homeowners would be without fiber then, I would imagine, for a while until that gets resolved.
Yeah, what happened, what I think actually caused the Telkom to become aware of this and to be upset about it was apparently Vodacom allegedly damaged Telkom's copper cable infrastructure while it was pulling the fiber through and knocked five houses in the estate offline.
Okay, that could be a problem.
Yeah.
So the question is, if they didn't do that, would Telkom they have known?
Would Telkom have known about it? Yeah. I'm sure they would have figured it out eventually, but maybe they would have just kept quiet. But I think they were really annoyed that five of their customers were knocked offline because of Vodacom.
Yeah. I guess that's a good enough reason it's a good enough example to see why you can't just have anybody installing anything in any duct in the ground. I mean, you need to have the right permissions.
Yes.
But what I would love to see is these guys actually working a bit together and maybe having an additional pipe within a pipe that says, okay, this is open for the estate or the road or whatever, to install additional infrastructure. Because in my road, you know, we've had MTN and Vumatel playing. MTN obviously had a different agenda. I think they are connecting cell phone masts.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I mean, why have two people trench?
Yeah.
It creates a lot of mess, wastes a lot of time, you know. And these pipes can be put in once, I guess, you know, and you can subdivide them. But anyway, we're not in that business.
Certainly, I think it makes sense for new estates, for property developers putting in new buildings, new complexes, new residential estates, to put their own ducting in, because then it can be owned by the homeowners or by the estate or whatever it happens to be. And then anyone can put their, say, if you want two providers, they just put the cable. Because it's actually best, it's in your interest to have more than one fiber provider into your house, let's face it.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess it's a new way of thinking when you're building building a property or a state. Yeah. But I guess a lot of these guys would just install fiber from the get-go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had the same issue with fiber, actually. OpenServe, part of Telkom, wanted to put in fiber. The complex had already agreed that Vumatel was going to trench the place. So I said to the residents at a meeting, you know, we've got the option as well it actually happened after the meeting, and I put it to the body corporate. I said, you know, we've got the option now of having OpenServe also roll out fiber. This is after, you know, Vumatel spent a month trenching through the complex getting everyone rather annoyed by the disruptions. I was very much in favor of OpenServe coming in because having two fiber providers into your house allows you to play off against the other. And they were willing to make the investment, even though Vumatel was already in there. Which I thought was very interesting. Mm. And the body corporate said no. They don't want the disruption.
Again. Look, I mean, Vumatel is a very good choice, and you can still choose your provider on that.
Mm. You can. Mm. You can, on top of that, yeah. That wholesale price which the ISP pays, who ends up, you know, if you've got two providers, you can...
I see what you're saying.
You can choose, if OpenServe cuts its prices, for example, you could switch to OpenServe. If Vumatel suddenly becomes more expensive, whereas if you've only got Vumatel, then you're stuck with Vumatel. Mm. And if Vumatel becomes more expensive than OpenServe, then you're just going to have to pay more. I suppose that, you know, in the broader market, they'll try and be competitive with each other, so the price will come down. But still, you know, having choice.
I guess it's also, I mean, you understand the industry, so it is a bit of forward thinking. But for the guy on the street, you know, if he's got the service by a reputable company, I think he's going to be than happy.
They didn't want the disruption again.
Yeah. And it's not too bad to be stuck with Vumatel. I mean, I remember days when we were stuck with other companies. Yeah. Choice.
I'm just amazed that two fiber providers are beating down my door from 3 years ago when there was no fiber.
Didn't have anybody.
Now they're beating you down your door to get in. It's just remarkable. Plus, there's a third fiber provider coming down the street as well.
Oh, interesting. Fantastic. So, I mean, just a quick fiber update. How's your fiber been treating you? I mean, we like to gloat about this because it's just absolutely phenomenal.
I love it.
It still is.
I absolutely love it. And we spoke about this on last week's podcast, the 200 meg service. Vumatel has said nothing. I was expecting a statement this week. About the 200 meg service, but they've said absolutely nothing about it. And the 1st of August is just a matter of days away.
Hmm. Interesting. But we know that you will upgrade and report back on the performance of that 200 meg line.
As soon as it comes, assuming it's not ridiculously priced.
Good times.
Last story I wanted to chat about was WhatsApp and Messenger. So Facebook put out its latest quarterly results this week, and Mark Zuckerberg on the investor call said that he's going to be more aggressive in monetizing instant messaging. And, of course, they own those two big platforms. WhatsApp now has 1 billion monthly active users. And Messenger's also huge. And they're now going to look to monetize that. But I was thinking about it. If they start to monetize WhatsApp, isn't it just going to be really annoying?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to think that Facebook is going to come up with some really interesting ways of doing so, like they do with Facebook. I mean... You can get unobtrusive ads on that platform, but how do you successfully monetize something like that without making it annoying for your customers?
I find Instagram really annoying now because of all the ads. In fact, I've stopped using Instagram because I'm just sick of seeing all those ads all the time. Every third thing is an
ad. Every third person is an ad. Yeah.
And the last thing I want to be doing is typing a message to someone in WhatsApp, and then an ad pops up and gets in the way of our conversation. And it's not like there aren't other alternatives out there. I mean. Sure, WhatsApp has become a standard, but I've got multiple messaging apps on my phone. In fact, let me just grab my phone here. I've got so many messaging
apps. Go to your telly and see.
I've actually got so many messaging apps on my phone now that it's. Where's my messaging? Here we go. So obviously I've got SMS. Hangouts.
Yes.
WhatsApp. Yep. Messenger. Telegram. Duo, which is more of a video thing.
Yes.
And Signal. I don't use Signal that much, but I use Telegram a lot, much more than I used to.
Interesting. Yeah, and I've never actually installed it to try it for that purpose.
Yeah, Telegram's got a great desktop app, and I've got a few people now that I communicate with regularly on there. It's the WhatsApp desktop app is not that great because it's kind of just like a web.
Yeah, it's like a pop-up web browser. Yeah. I use it often, but it's not the slickest experience.
I do use it as well, but Telegram is fantastic, and It was more secure. I don't know about now with WhatsApp's end-to-end encryption, but certainly Telegram was a very secure option.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got some really nice features in there that like allow you to burn messages after a certain period of time.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah, that is awesome.
But Telegram is it's a really slick app, actually. It's if WhatsApp was ever to falter, I wouldn't be surprised if Telegram rose and became the new dominant standard.
Yeah, look, it's certainly not difficult to make a switch if you have to. I guess it's just what your friends and your communities are using.
That's the problem. Everyone's on WhatsApp. Mm. Everyone is on WhatsApp.
Mm.
But if WhatsApp starts getting ads in it and they're annoying ads, then I don't know. I think you'll find people starting to move to other platforms.
Yeah, look, the trick is going to be how do they inject those ads to monetize it without alienating your customers. And on a messaging application, because you don't want to be distracted by too many bits of text. I guess graphics is going to be the way. Interesting.
You know what? I'd actually pay to use WhatsApp, not to have ads.
Maybe that's a bring in a paid for tier. Everybody else for free service, you see the ads. That would be a good strategy.
Yeah, like YouTube does. You pay $10 a month and you don't see any ads. I'd pay it. WhatsApp is a great platform. So many people use so many WhatsApp groups. I would pay Facebook not to see ads in my message stream.
No, I completely agree with you. And maybe that is where, how much would you pay for a good messaging app? $20, $50, $100?
A rand.
A rand, yeah.
Yeah, 50 rand a month.
Mm. 50 rand a month, not a once-off app fee.
Oh, yeah, that would be even better, of course.
I don't know if they'll be able to get away with the monthly fee structure on something like WhatsApp. I don't know if that would work. In my opinion.
As long as there's a free tier.
As long as there's a free tier, which a lot of people would use, they'd probably see those ads. But it wouldn't – it'll allow them to then move on because if there are better apps out there. And it'll probably give somebody else a chance to also develop something that's not
– Yeah. I more suspect that it's not just going to be – it won't be ads in the stream. It'll be more like what WeChat is doing, getting companies – channels and that sort of thing on the platform.
So you're turning the platform into something better.
They're doing that with Messenger already to some extent. I think WeChat leads in terms of that sort of monetization, games and all that sort of stuff that's built into the platform.
In-app purchases and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and allowing companies to use it as a platform to communicate with customers. So you opt in almost to the advertising.
Look, I would certainly, if WhatsApp became a platform where not only do you better communicate with people, but you have these structures in place that allow me to plug it into various things. So maybe it can be a conduit for other platforms or other messaging platforms. I think there's a lot you can do with that. And in-app purchases, give me the option to pay for a service or, something within the application that expands the service. I can see value in that.
I strongly suspect that they won't be putting irritating ads in your messaging.
Yeah, in the live.
They'll be doing more what WeChat does, and WeChat's been hugely successful. I personally don't use it because I don't want the Chinese government reading my messages. they've got a very successful model there.
Look, if I put my business hat on, my marketing hat or my content development hat, and if I want to, if I look at a service like WhatsApp and the kind of things that I could, that I would like to do to reach an audience of WhatsApp, there really is so much I think you can do. Mm. It's really interesting things.
Mm.
But the fine line becomes the fine line between irritating your customer to a point where they don't want to use the app, like you see with Instagram in your experience, or just something where, this is going to add value to my life, like a WeChat type of scenario where there's actually a reason for you to use it, that you want to bring out some of those other features.
Yes.
Interesting.
Although, to be honest, as a user of these services, as the owner and operator of a website, Tech Central, I'd see huge potential in using WhatsApp as a means of distributing our content and generating traffic for the website. But as a user of WhatsApp, I don't actually want all these peripheral services. All I want is the ability to communicate via chat.
I agree.
I don't want all this peripheral stuff getting in the way. And if it starts to get in the way, then I'll start using Telegram instead. It's an interesting one. I think Facebook, I'm absolutely certain that Mark Zuckerberg and the Facebook guys know that it's not going to be a simple case of putting ads into this thing. They're going to have to come up with clever strategies for monetizing these platforms, and I think they've probably got tons of ideas things we haven't even thought of. Don't be surprised if you see changes to coming to your WhatsApp soon, as Facebook looks to monetize the or make back some of the $22 billion they spent buying the company in the first place.
Yeah, the money has to come from somewhere. Right?
It's actually quite remarkable that they haven't tried to monetize it yet.
Yeah, I think but I think also they were probably a little bit reserved in not doing so, simply because they didn't want to alienate too many users without the perfect model.
Yeah, indeed. WhatsApp actually used to have to pay for WhatsApp on the iPhone.
There was some. I don't know how it worked. I think some users may have got the prompt or some platforms, but I was on iPhone for a long time and I'd never got that. But there was pop-ups. Maybe it was, I don't know if it was spam or maybe it was just they were rolling out these features, but I do know people that paid $1 for WhatsApp without to get...
I think they were thinking of that as a monetization method in the early days, and then they just decided. On Android, it was always free.
But I mean, I never paid for it. So maybe it was a selective thing. Maybe it was an A-B testing, trying to figure out how to do that.
It had some message like, this is free for now, but we may be charging you $2 a year or something down the line. Something like that, yeah. And I do recall that some users did actually pay for it. But they've clearly gone for the free model now, and that's obviously the best model to get scale.
Yes, exactly.
So that's our news. Let's get on to our regular features. I was struggling a bit to find a winner this week, and I thought, let me choose Andile Ngcaba. He's just sold his stake in Dimension Data, Middle East and Africa. I think they had 25% through Convergence Partners. It was a broad-based BEE deal that was done all the way back in 2004. So that transaction ran for 13 years. And it appears to have been very successful for them. For both sides, but he's sold out of that business now, and Convergence has sold out of that business, and Andile Ngcaba has left Dimension Data. So Dimension Data is now looking to do a new BEE deal, and I spoke to Grant Bodley, who's the CEO for Middle East and Africa, on Thursday, and he said that they are looking to conclude a new BEE deal by the end of October. Which they have to do because their BEE rating will fall from level 2 all the way down if they don't conclude the deal by then.
Yes.
And they're also looking to do, and they'll be doing this specifically in the South African office rather than the broader Middle East Africa group. And they're also looking potentially to do an employee share incentive scheme as part of that deal. But our winner, Andile Ngcaba, because it just was a good deal for both sides. And our loser this week is Twitter. They put out their latest quarterly numbers, and quarter on quarter they showed precisely zero user growth.
Look, I love Twitter. I love
it.
It's my favorite social network by far. Mine too. And I hate seeing stuff like this where, how do they not grow? I mean, it seems like everybody's using it, or at least everybody that I want to connect with. I want to get people's opinions. Twitter is where I go. It's not
a social network in the sense of connecting family and friends, which Facebook is. And I think the bulk of people just want to connect in that way. It's a way of connecting with journalists, with talking to politicians, with seeing what business leaders are saying.
It's a connected network of respected voices. Okay, I say respected because there's an inverted commas because there's a lot of
Donald Trump's.
Yes. So I mean, there would be exception to that one, but. I mean, you follow the voices you want to hear, and I think that is so valuable without any fluff. I love the character limits. I love TweetDeck as a platform.
TweetDeck's fantastic.
Just to be able to see a lot of information. I think it's one of the best ways you can get so much information, so much broad information, whether it's telecommunication technology, drone flying, gaming. I mean, everything is there.
Yeah, and you can be so selective in what you look at. Exactly. If someone starts posting junk, you just don't follow them.
Yeah.
But I've got... I've got three monitors on my desk in the office, and my right-hand monitor is just TweetDeck. It's dedicated to Twitter. I don't do that for other social networks. It's open all day long, and I'm looking at it all day long. When I'm busy, really busy with something, obviously I won't be looking at it as often, but you kind of, having it on that monitor, you kind of get a sense when something important's happened.
It's a dashboard for the internet. I mean, if you look at what Reddit was and those kind of aggregators of the internet, Twitter is just an evolution of that for me, where you can flag the right things or the right keywords or the right people, and those alerts will pop up. And like you said, for journalists in particular, I mean, you know when something breaks, when somebody tweets something from the CEO of a company or the engineer for Apple, or it's like getting the news from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
There is a lot of fluff, and I guess with any social network, there's the good and the bad. But Twitter, more than most, I find the information is better credible.
Yes.
And you can get right down to the person.
Provided you follow the right people, of course.
Provided you follow the right people.
Don't follow the Gupta bots.
But again, you've got this very tight ring fence, right? Yeah. If you don't follow anybody on Twitter, you're not going to see anything. So you add one person in the industry that you want, and then suggestions based on that. And that's kind of how I've been growing over the last couple of years that I've been part of that.
Mm.
And that's why I like it so much. It's enough of the good stuff.
But it's not, as one analyst put it, it's not a mass market product like Facebook. It appeals to a big niche, but it's not the same. It's not as big a market as Facebook. Mm.
I would like to think of it as a digital educated. You know, those kind of users like us, the geeks. It's a serious social network with a relatively serious purpose. I mean, we use it for a little bit of fun, but this is about the world around us, the technology we care about.
What's going on
the industries we care about.
It's a brilliant way for me to keep up what's going on. And I follow a lot of journalists on Twitter.
Mm.
And it's a great way to see what's going on, what press conferences are happening, what people are saying, you know. I can quickly, this week, Pravin Gordhan was speaking at at some event and was saying some interesting things. So, you know, I was sitting at my desk and people were tweeting this. I thought, oh, that's actually really interesting. Mm. So I fired up DSTV Now, fired up a news channel, and then watched it live.
Yes.
I wouldn't even have known that was happening without Twitter there. Yeah. It's a great way of following what's happening in the news on a real-time basis.
I often catch end of conversations where somebody would tweet somebody back, and that reply gets my attention enough to, okay, what was this thread about?
Mm.
Go back, and then I find the information that I wanted.
The other thing I'm finding more and more useful with Twitter is its search engine. If I want to do research on something that's going on, it's so powerful. Search.twitter.com. For example, EOH on Thursday, its share price gyrating all over the place. I want to know what's going on and what other people are saying about this. So I go to search.twitter.com, I type in EOH, and instantly I can see what people are saying, what investors, traders, analysts, they're all posting on Twitter. What's going on? This is our theory. Mm. This is, and you get a quick view of what's being said out there.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, Twitter definitely feels like the kind of place you have a conversation where other social networks are really pin boards, notice boards,
yes.
If that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. So
it's sad to see no growth, and especially in light of all these bots coming on, you would think that there would be some growth. Mm. But I think if you're looking at real people who use this platform, it's I really hope to see some turnaround in this.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't matter. I mean, they've got a huge base. It's 380 million active users.
Do they need to grow? I guess that's a
good
question.
Do they need to grow? I mean, if they start to go backwards, sure, that's a problem.
Mm.
But 380 million people, you just figure out the ways of better monetizing that.
Because the people that use it love it, right?
Yeah.
So the people that are on there are constantly on there. I mean, I'm on there more than any other social platform.
Yeah.
It's my news source.
Yes. I mean, if you were told you have to cancel all of your social networks and you can never resubscribe to them, but you can keep one.
Mm.
Which one would you keep?
No, Twitter, without
Twitter.
A doubt. Look, it'd be difficult to get let go of Instagram, and I do love Facebook for a lot of reasons. I think it's really useful, but Twitter is the one that, without a doubt, you can't.
Yeah. I keep it. Oh, I'd be the same. Facebook would be hard to let go of. Instagram, I could. No, I've got no feelings for.
I still have a little bit of love for Instagram.
It's something I use if I've got time to kill standing in a queue or something, but. Facebook I find useful to know what my friends are up to.
Facebook is incredibly useful.
Yeah. If I had to choose, I'd ditch them all in favor of Twitter.
This is something about beautiful text. Again, use TweetDeck if you haven't used it before. The interface is amazing.
Oh, TweetDeck is definitely the way to go. I don't really use Twitter on my phone. I use it if I see a notification come in, but I don't really scroll through Twitter on my phone.
I use Twitter on my phone as just reading my timeline, but on my desktop is, because TweetDeck isn't on mobile devices. Mm. TweetDeck is definitely the main.
It's definitely a weekday thing, though. I mean, on a Sunday afternoon, I'm really not interested in seeing what's on Twitter.
I'm always interested. I'm always interested. I've always got an eye on there.
Because on a Sunday afternoon, people are, I don't know.
It's a different audience, a different audience.
It's much quieter as well. I love it on big events, though, if something major happens in politics or something, and then you open up your TweetDeck and you just see this waterfall of tweets streaming so quickly you can't actually keep up. It doesn't happen that often, but and then you compare it to a quiet Sunday afternoon where one tweet drops in every 3 minutes.
Yes,
you know.
Yes. Ah, Twitter, we love you.
Let's move on to our picks this week. Rehan, what have you got?
So the pick that I'm doing, I actually saw this beautiful device at MediaTek last week, and I got a little bit of hands-on time earlier this week with this absolutely phenomenal product. It's called the Insta360 Pro, and Duncan, you know my love for 360-degree photography. Yes. Video. And it's still a platform that I experiment with on a daily basis because there's just so much you can do with it if you're into photos and video. But the Insta360 is essentially, and I'm just going to show you a photograph here, it's a little ball. It almost looks like the Nokia Ozio, I think that was what it was called. But this is an all-in-one camera that allows you to use it as a normal 360-degree camera. But what I really love about it is you can hook it up straight to an external power source and to a network cable or wireless, but you can stream live from this camera, which compared to my rig, Freedom 360 rig, which is six GoPro cameras, you are so limited in what you can do there because I need to manipulate each camera individually. With this thing, it's an all-in-one. Set it up, go. You can live stream to the internet. You can do tiny planet photographs. You can full on 360 immersive experiences.
How much does it cost?
So the Insta360 Pro goes for roughly 55,000 Rand. But if you compare that to my Freedom 360 rig that I bought 2 years ago at 75,000 Rand, excluding the software, I'd much rather spend money on this now because Obviously the technology has matured. But I mean, 50 grand seems like a lot, but what does a high-end DSLR cost you? And again, if it's purpose-driven, if you know that you want to use this for, I mean, I use this in business. Mm. I find it very interesting, streaming for various companies and various people.
Yeah.
But just as a really high-end camera, I mean, it can do 8K. 8K 360.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, you can't, if you just use YouTube, you'll have proper 4K 360-degree video. Yeah.
8K.
8K is fantastic.
That's going to tax your Vumatel connection.
That's what we have.
We're looking for something that goes
down. Yes. So look, I'm trying to get one for a longer period of time. I did spend a little bit of time with it hands-on. It worked well enough for me to say, yes, I think I need to look at this more seriously.
Okay.
I'm just waiting for the next project to justify it. But yeah, Insta360.com, definitely worth checking out if you want really cool 360-degree photos and video.
Cool. Go check that out. I've actually got two picks this week. One of them is a podcast, as I mentioned in last week's show. I'm going to over the next few weeks, I'm just going to pick some of my favorite local podcasts because there's so many of them now that have popped up, and some of them are really good.
Yes.
And I think it's important to share the love in the podcast community. Last week I picked what's it called? Justice Malala's show.
Yes. The Burning Platform.
On Cliff Central. I'm actually going to pick another Cliff Central podcast this week, and that's the Renegade Report. It's hosted by Ramon Cabanac and Jonathan Witt. Ramon describes himself as an anarchist, and Jonathan Witt is very clearly right-wing conservative. Those sort of voices you don't really hear much. Certainly in the US you do, but you don't really hear them in South Africa.
On mainstream media.
On mainstream radio stations and that sort of thing. Both guys are quite wacky, and I enjoy the interviews that they do. They've had some really good guests on actually over the months. I don't know how long they've been going. I think at least a year now. But they've had on some good guests like Helen Ziller, for example. They get on some really interesting guests, not just local guys, international guys, conservatives. They don't seem to focus on people with one particular ideology. They'll get an extreme socialist on one week, and they'll have a
really open discussion.
Right wing gun nut the next week, you know. So it makes for interesting listening, and I enjoy it. It's so unlike anything else that's available in South Africa right
now. Engaging content.
You might not agree with what the guys say or agree with their their political views, but it's a different view, and so I enjoy it from that perspective. And they get great guests on, and it's thought provoking, which is what a good podcast should be, I suppose.
Oh yes.
And my product pick this week is Adobe Audition, which
I love it.
We use to edit this podcast.
Yes.
And I'm picking it because the latest version, version 2017 of the Adobe Creative Cloud Adobe Audition suite, or the suite with Adobe Audition 2017.
It's called just Creative Cloud.
Creative Cloud, yeah. Is superb. Mm. I've been spending some time actually learning how to use the software properly. There's some great educational clips on YouTube. Adobe actually has some great educational stuff as well. And the stuff you can do here in terms of noise reduction and
it's Photoshop for audio.
It is.
That is really what it is.
It's a great
description.
That's
what I love it. Yeah.
And what's nice about it as well is if you don't get into all that high-end advanced stuff, it's actually so simple to use. You want to create a multi-track session, you pull in the audio tracks, and you can actually edit a podcast without even knowing how to use the software.
Yeah.
Sure, if you want to start doing the more advanced stuff like noise reduction and there's tons of advanced stuff in there that I haven't even looked at yet or even thought about.
You can manipulate anything of any audio bit. You can isolate individual noise pieces or just enhance vocals.
And drive down into individual tracks. And I have to admit there's other quite expensive software out there for audio editing stuff, software like Wavelab and there's lots of other ones. Tends to be packaged software rather than the software as a service that Adobe has gone for now.
Yeah.
But Audition is easy to use, and it's I'm constantly blown away by how powerful it is. The more I dig into it, the more I can do.
Yeah, I'm such a big fan of the Adobe Creative Cloud. I use almost every tool in that suite daily.
Yeah,
and that services model, it works.
Yeah,
you know, I'd much rather pay a little bit every month.
Yeah.
Then I have software that in a year or two has to be replaced.
Yeah.
I mean, you know how often Adobe Creative Cloud updates their software. When there's a problem now with Lightroom, they're busy patching it and rolling out an update. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I've actually subscribed to it recently, and it's not cheap, especially when you convert it into Rand, but it's great stuff.
Did you go for the full suite, or did you just go for the individual product?
Full suite.
Yeah. What, $69 now?
Well, I went for the individual one.
For the individual one.
Yeah, $50 a month.
Yes.
You get 20 plus 30, 25 products. I'm not going to use them all. I mean, I'm probably never going to use Adobe Illustrator, for example. Mm. But I use Photoshop intensively. I use Audition intensively. I'm going to use Lightroom, of course, more. And I'll probably start to use Premiere Pro as well.
Yeah, Premiere Pro is absolutely fantastic.
Just for personal video editing.
With the trick with Creative Cloud is one or two products you can get for $20 individual. So if you just use one or two products, the photographic side, the photo and Lightroom, you can get together
cheap.
For $10,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
But once you get to three or four products you need to use, it's cheaper to get the Creative Cloud subscription.
Yeah. Well, I use Photoshop and I use Audition intensively, so that's two. And if you buy those separately, it's $40.
Yeah, so you might as well.
Might as well spend the extra $10 a month and get the whole suite. Because then I can, there will be other apps in there I can use. I mean, I'm certainly going to use Adobe Acrobat.
And I can, Acrobat, obviously, very nice in a business sense. And I can highly recommend if anybody wants to just better themselves in terms of graphic to look at Illustrator. Illustrator is
powerful.
Daunting, but man alive, what you can do with that thing.
If you've got a Wacom tablet or something, then...
Even better. And but you don't have to have a creative bone in your body. It's just the fact, the way that you can, again, manipulate it. Think what you can do with Photoshop and photographs.
Yes.
Now, there are other tools is the same thing for their respective industries.
Yes.
That's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Dreamweaver I also use a bit, not extensively, but... but all these other ones I won't use: InDesign, InCopy, Muse, Prelude, Scout. I mean, I don't even know what half these things are.
Media Encoder is also something you should look at. It's a very powerful tool, very highly underrated.
Yeah.
It's a media encoder, so you can take formats to different formats.
Video, nice.
Audio. I mean, you probably won't need it if you're exporting from Audition, but if you bring in outside content, video and audio, and you want to re-encode those, repackage it, make them better encoding, smaller file sizes. There's so much you can do with Media Encoder.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Great stuff. I'll definitely have a look at that. So that's my pick, Adobe Audition, and of course the Renegade podcast, Renegade Report podcast. Go check that out. And that is our show. Rachat, shall we do the quiz results?
Let's do it. The first question. Following news that Andile Nkaba's conversions partners have sold a stake in Dimension Data Middle East and Africa, the IT services company plans to do a new BE deal for its South African business. When must include this deal by? And the answer there, 31st of October this year.
Second question, Telkom this week won a high court case against rival Vodacom, which was accused of installing fiber in its ducts in which Cape Town residential estate? And the answer is Denegier.
The third question, which top female US technology executive is rumored to be the front runner to take over as CEO of Uber? The answer there is Meg Whitman.
And Johannesburg Finance MMC Rabelani Degada has promised that the city's broken billing system will be fixed by when? And that's by the end of March 2018.
And the final question in this week's quiz. Another German software company has joined SAP, in being caught up in an alleged kickback scandal involving the Guptas. What is the name of this company? And the answer there is Software AG.
Software AG, second biggest software company in Germany after SAP, as a matter of interest. And that's our quiz. If you have any feedback for us, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. We hope you like our new jingle, by the way. It's quite funky.
Very cool. I like it.
We like it a lot. Let us know what you think about that. So until next time, from Richard and myself, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.